This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, all my cat-loving friends. This is Rita back with 19 Cats and Counting, another wonderful episode. And boy, I have a great guest for you today. I can't wait to get her here talking with you. But first, we have to stop for a little commercial break. We'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting. I am certified cat behaviorist Rita Reimers here on 19 Cats and Counting. I'm reading this book that is wonderful. And if you are watching the video version, you see Whiskers in the Wild. I have the author, Dr. Deborah Blaine, here. We're going to talk to her a little bit about what this book is all about and maybe answer some questions about those ferals and stray cats. So Dr. Deborah, can I call you Dr. Deborah?
You can call me whatever you want.
First of all, I love this book. What gave you the idea to write this?
Well, thank you so much. You know, it's interesting. What gave me the idea was as I told you, I've changed careers recently, and I don't have a lot of money to donate for cat causes, but somehow or other, I got onto the messaging loop for this iconic cat rescuer who lives on Long Island. His name is John DeBacker, and a message went out.
Yeah, part of him.
Yeah. So a message came through, can somebody transport a cat from Syosset to West Babylon? And I kind of live right in the middle, and I was having writer's block because I'm an author, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go do that. So I went and I did that, and I met John. And I said to John, which I say to everybody I meet, are you interested in writing a book? Because one of the things I coach is people who want to write books.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, he was really interested. So we started talking after the cat was transported from where it was trapped to the vet. And it became clear to me that John wasn't going to have the time or the focus to be actually writing a book.
Okay.
But what we decided was that he would give me some of his best stories and I would make it into a book. But that book would have been more of a pamphlet because there weren't a lot of pages that we could get out of that. So then I thought, okay, well, let me put it into a cat book. And I had recently started writing nonfiction books. I wrote a book about how to write a book and how to self-publish.
I need to get that book.
So it's all on Amazon. So that's from the writer stuff. So I started putting together an outline for a book about cats. And then, of course, there was Midnight, who is sort of the star of Whiskers in the Wild, who had come to my door. And so I learned so much from this little stray who came to my front door one day and just meowed that I said, you know what, I want to put in more in the book than just stories about rescues. What do you do after your rescue? How do you recognize who needs to be rescued? How do you communicate with cats? And, you know, as I was telling you, there's a lot of misinformation out there in the lay world. When I put up a post, you know, does anybody belong to this cat? And I got a lot of, well-intended but not very helpful suggestions. And so I started doing research. And that's how I started writing the book, because I'm already an author. And I had this new... I had John's stories that I wanted to put in a book, but then I also just wanted to make available to people some information about how to interpret who's in your backyard and what to do for them. And then it extended to, well, what about when you bring them into your house? And what about the cats that are already in our houses? And so it became more about cat behavior in general, and which cat behavior is very similar outdoors and indoors. The same instincts make them do what they do. So when we understand that, I think it just makes for better relationships, regardless of where that interaction happens.
I agree with that. I'm always telling people, you know, the reason your cats are acting this way is basically out of instinct, especially with cats being in the middle of the food chain. You know, they're both predator and prey. A lot of what they do is that's how they survive out in nature.
Right. They're enormously accomplished survivors.
So how did Midnight really come to be part of your home? How did you find her, or she found you, really?
She found me. I had actually seen her from time to time from a distance in the neighborhood. You know, she'd never been that close that I could have necessarily been able to recognize her from another similar looking tuxedo. But, you know, there was a tuxedo out there that I used to see. But one day in winter, it was 2021, it was COVID. My neighbor had broken her arm, and she slipped, and I had ordered some food, and I had cut up the food, you know, like divided it, and I was bringing it next door. I would never have been outdoors at that hour. I walked out the front door, and there was this little black tuxedo sitting there. And I was like, oh, hi, how are you? Because I always talk to animals. And she meowed back. And I was like, but I'm holding this box. It looks like a pizza box, but I think there was pasta in it and a salad or whatever. And I said, well, you know, I'll be right back. And I went and I delivered it to my friend and helped her cut it up because she'd broken her shoulder or near her shoulder.
How awful.
And then I walked back and the cat's still sitting there. And so I said, you know, are you hungry? And she meowed. So I said, okay, well, you know, hang on. So I went inside. So in New York, I don't know. So we have like, I have like a wooden door and there's a storm door that's glass. So I went inside, I left the wooden door open. It was just the glass. And I went to get a bowl of cat food or so, you know. And she sat there with her nose pressed against the glass.
What's going on in there?
Yeah, let's go. Exactly. I mean, you know what? She did that for, that became like her signature thing. She would just spend, because I didn't take her indoors for 6 months, but she would just look indoors like that. She used to leave smudge marks on the glass. And anyway, I got a can and I got a bowl and I put it out for her, and I was about, you know, 4 feet away from her. I sat on the porch and she just devoured it.
And I just said, hungry.
I said, are you still hungry? So I got her like some kibble. She devoured that, and then she was gone. And we had a blizzard that night, which we were expecting. So I didn't see her for a couple of days. It turned out that the neighbor down the block who had been feeding her went to Florida for a month.
Oh, no wonder she was hungry.
And she was hungry. She had somebody coming to feed her, but it was only like twice a week. And it was the end of January. It was cold out. She was hungry. So 2 days later, Midnight was back. And then she would, you know, she came by twice a day. And then in the middle of the day, I would like go out and sit on the step and give her treats. And it was cold. Yeah. So I couldn't stay very long with her. But
yeah, I'm from New York. I remember how cold.
I mean, we're not as cold as Buffalo, but it can get cold. And, you know, but she would just always be there. She would wait for me. I used to be afraid because I was working these 12-hour shifts that when I would come up to the driveway that, you know, I was always afraid I was going to run her over because she'd sit in the driveway waiting for me. And I'd come home after 9 o'clock and it was dark, but then she'd move over and very slowly, carefully, I would drive in. And
could you touch her at this point yet or not yet?
I could. You know, when I finally identified the neighbor who was who had been feeding her, and I got to talk to her, and she said, you know, she'll let you pet her. She had actually put what is this stuff? Is it
Revolution?
She put Revolution on her to keep the mites and the ticks away. And she said, yeah, you can pet her. So I started giving her, you know, she started to eat treats out of my hand. She'd let me touch her a little bit on the cheek, a little bit on the back, but then she'd run. Like she'd come over and she'd run. And that went on for 6 months. And then in the summer, it was really hot, and she used to drool a lot. She was missing like 20 teeth. Yeah, she was missing a bunch of teeth. But in the summer, she wasn't drooling. There was nothing. She was just dry. She wouldn't eat. She wouldn't drink water. Like a lot of cats won't just drink from a bowl of water unless they've been indoors for a while. It's an instinct. It's
yeah, they like running water.
Right. It's kind of a self-preservation thing because stagnant water can have disease.
Exactly.
So she wouldn't drink the water. I kept trying to give her really wet food, but she was becoming listless. And I was like, you know what? I got to get her out of there. It was the dog days of summer of August, you know?
Yeah. And, we get those down here too in the Carolinas. Too hot.
Yeah. So then I got in, I tried to, foolish me. I mean, at that point I thought I could, I could pet her and all that. I brought a little carrier outside. I made an appointment with the vet and I just, and I went, okay, I'm going to pick you up.
Good luck with that one.
That did not go well.
Did you actually get her to the vet that day or did you
that
have to
day,
make another?
Absolutely not. No.
I've been there.
She jumped so high. I actually have when I finally did get her to the vet, I have a picture of her where she ended up on top of the cab supply cabinets. She bumped her head on the ceiling, almost ended up inside the drop ceiling.
Whoa.
She was just terrified.
Well, she probably hadn't been indoors for a long time. Plus, she didn't really know you that way, right? That you could pick her up and put her in a carrier.
She still won't let me pick her up.
Yeah. Some cats never do.
She when she was peeing blood after she'd been indoors for 4 months, she let me pick her up to put her in the... She was just in so much pain.
Yeah, she had no choice there. So, yeah, tell us about that. When you told me why she was peeing blood, that just...
Oh, so she was peeing blood because she developed bladder stones. And by the way, I learned that stress is something that actually increases the likelihood that a cat will develop bladder stones.
That is
so
true.
Which is kind of strange. I don't know. Maybe I'm a doctor, but I haven't figured out how that works, what that mechanism is. But she had been in the house for about 4 months. And my senior cat, who's now 16, was not pleased. She wasn't on board. Usually she likes projects. And I thought this would be the midnight project. And she was not into this project.
Not my idea of a project, Mom, right?
Exactly. So, but anyway, she started peeing the blood. I brought her in. And so they took x-rays and she had bladder stones, which, so she had surgery, So
yeah, I know. Believe me, I've met Bill.
Was
I know
over $2,000 for the surgery, but she was my baby, and I had actually before then been thinking that I might rehome her because my senior cat was miserable. She just was really miserable. But when while the vet was evaluating her, I was at work, and I get this phone call, and he says really angry. He says, "Where did you say you got this cat?" And I was like. And I know this guy like 20 years. And I was like, she showed up at my door. And he said, well, your neighbors have been shooting her. I was like, what? Now, this the neighborhood I'm in. I can't even imagine that. But if I were midnight, I would have moved as soon as I recovered.
She probably did.
She had two pellets. She still has those two pellets sitting.
They can't take them out because of where they are.
You know what? We don't know how long they've been there. It would be more traumatic, physiologically traumatic, I think, to take them out.
Probably so.
One of them is like a millimeter away from her femur, the big long bone in the thigh. The other one's in her belly, and it's like half a centimeter over. It would have hit her aorta, or the other direction would have been in her spine. And
they could have paralyzed her,
killed her, crippled her, and then when I saw that, I just couldn't rehome her after that. It was just too much trauma. And I looked at my little Sammy and I said, you're going to have to get over it. She's staying.
I'm glad she came to you. I think sometimes cats have an instinct of who's going to be helpful and who's not. But still, she took her a while to trust you. You knew she was a stray versus a feral. And a lot of people don't really understand the difference between a stray cat and a feral cat. And there's a world of difference.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she meowed at me. Feral cats don't meow to humans. Cats learn to meow to humans only when they've been around humans. I feel like it's sort of a way that they sort of make an exception for us because they don't meow to each other.
It's a throwback to Mom because they meow to Mom when they're kittens.
Right, right. Right. But they don't meow, but adult cats don't meow to each other. They make a lot of other noises and a lot of other vocalizations. And I made a list of them and what they mean and how we can decipher.
Hold up the book again. Great book.
Thank you. but yeah, so she meowed and she did, you know, she did eventually eat treats out of my hand and she would let me pet her a little bit. And ferals don't do that. But so she really inspired me to look into what are outdoor cats? What do they need? What don't they need? You know, and then there's feral, there's stray, there's a house cat. They're different. You know, they're all cats and they all have the same instinctive behaviors, but they respond to us very differently.
Yeah, ferals don't want anything to do with us if they're true ferals.
Right.
I took in 4 feral kittens about 15 years ago. 3 of them tamed. They've all passed. I still have the 4th one, would never tame down. But she loves the other cats. And actually now, after 15 years, I can pet her a little bit, but then she'll open her mouth and go, and let me know she's done.
Right, right. It's interesting when they do that, right? A lot of people get like, oh, they're going to bite. But a lot of times, you know, even my Sammy cat and some of the cats at the cat cafe that I work at and I volunteer at, they'll put their mouth on me for a second. It's a warning.
Yes.
Like
yes.
If they really wanted to bite me, my head would be in shreds. I'd be in the hospital. But they're, you know, they're just like tapping me saying, stop, I've had enough. And even Sammy cat will do that sometime. And it's, you know, and when I yell at her, she just looks at me like, well, what do you want me to do?
I have a couple of cats that do that too. Some easier than others. Some bite a little too hard. I'm like, I know what you're doing, but you really have to watch their body language. And another thing I tell people, you know, when you're sitting TV and you're mindless, you pet your cat over and over and over and over, eventually it's going to bite you. Because how would you like it if your significant other was holding your hand and rubbing it over and over? After a while, you're like,
exactly, exactly. Exactly. I, when I volunteer, I have to like, I feel like I have to run interference, especially with the children and the cats.
Oh, yeah.
And I tell them, imagine yourself a cat and there's this stranger, like you're short, but to the cat, you're really big. And, you know, imagine if someone was doing this to you and you didn't really know them, how would you feel? And, you know, just to really try to help them see things through the cat's eyes.
It really helps put them in perspective. I think animals teach kids a lot about patience and responsibility and also about consent, right? Can I touch you? Can I not touch you? I always say to my cats, I'm going to pet you now. That okay? Especially the new ones, right? They kind of know what you're, you know, it's like word association becomes almost like with dogs. They know when you say certain words what you're going to do. And that really helps them relax.
Yeah, yeah. Cats, I think, are as intelligent as dogs, if not sometimes more so. They really, but they don't let us know that. They're not so interested in making us happy. So they file things away, or they understand, but they're not necessarily going to join a conversation with you unless they feel heard. Unless they feel like it's a two-way conversation, and it's not just you telling them what to do.
I have cats that will run to me. Like I'll go, pie, pie, for my sweetie pie. She'll come running up to me. I love that. But it takes a while to build that type of a relationship with a cat. I always say dogs trust you until you give them a reason to not trust you. But cats are the opposite. They won't trust you until you give them a reason
to trust
you.
Exactly right. And every cat is different. Every cat has a different personality. And it's, you know, it's like if you have 2 children, they may have completely different interests.
For sure.
Or one is shy and one is extroverted. And there's, you know, I feel like there's a little person in every animal, I think, but especially in cats and even in dogs. And by connecting with who that cat is, it makes it much easier to communicate with them.
Oh, definitely. One of the things I tell people is, you know, you can't bring a cat home expecting, oh, I want a lab cat. I'm going to make him a lab cat. If he's not a lab cat, he's not going to be a lab cat.
He's not going to be a lab cat.
Right? You have to accept them where they are.
Yep.
We have to take a small break, but we'll be right back. I want to talk some more about this and also another book you're working on. I'm really excited about. We'll be right back.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem. But the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye. I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting. I'm your host, Rita Reimer, certified cat behaviorist, and I'm here with Dr. Deborah Blaine. And we're talking about her book, Whiskers in the Wild, and about how she came to write this. A lot of this has to do with the midnight that came to her door. I'm on a Reddit a lot, and I see people say, oh, this cat came to me, what do I do? So what do you do when a cat comes to you? It just depends on the cat, correct?
Yeah, and it also depends on what the cat needs. So for instance, when Midnight came to my door, she had this, her ear looked like it had been chewed off, and I thought she'd been in a fight. But she had actually been through the TNR program, the Trap, Neuter, Return. So she'd been trapped, she'd been spayed, and she'd been returned to the neighborhood. I think she moved because she wasn't, we all know each other here, and nobody here did that. But it depends on what the cat needs and what the cat's looking for. Not every cat is going to be a good candidate to bring inside.
That's true.
And to assume that they are, is makes life harder for us and for the cat. Sometimes the cat just needs meals on a regular basis, or a shelter, or both. I mean, if you're giving shelter and food, I mean, they kind of go together. Sometimes the cat, if you find a cat who's coming around and they look injured, they need medical care, or if they look, you know, sick in some way. So I think that, and then if you decide that you need to trap the cat, or you need to get the cat to the vet, or you want to bring the cat inside. So what do you do? So it's not very like, first of all, it's not always a good idea to just open the door and let your cat come in.
Especially if you've got another cat.
Exactly, because you don't know what this new cat might be carrying. That doesn't mean that they're not completely treatable, but you don't want it to spread to your other cats.
Definitely, so, especially things like leukemia that's not curable and that is too easily spread between cats. FIV, you can work around, but not leukemia.
Yeah, yeah. Or even something less ominous like ear mites.
Right. Oh, yeah, we battled that here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, when I got Midnight, she had terrible ear mites and I was trying to keep her in the bathroom upstairs, and she cried like a newborn every night till I finally said to my, you know, to my vet, how long do I have to keep her? Well, you don't want it to see your other cat together. I said, why don't we just treat Sammy Cat too? And he was like, oh, that's a good idea. So we put the medication on Sammy Cat. Medication was working on Midnight. Now I didn't have to leave her in there, because she was really, really crying, literally like a newborn baby. But it's, you know, if you want to get the cat, if you decide you're going to take the cat in, and if you make that decision, it should be a thought out commitment that you're not just going to like, oh yeah, let's see how it works out. Oh no, it doesn't work out. You know, you don't want to traumatize the cat further, especially if it's a reasonably friendly cat. There's a good chance that they have a history of having been betrayed, that they had a home somewhere, somebody already turned them out, somebody already broke their trust. And, you know, if a cat is born in the wild or outdoors as a feral, they learn to survive. Their mother teaches them to survive. If a cat has had a home for 5, 6 more years, or even a couple of years, and now that cat's turned out, they have to relearn how to survive, and they don't have a teacher. They don't have their mama showing them how to catch food, where to catch food, what to avoid, you know, so it's really heartbreaking.
Definitely. People think you can just turn a cat out and they'll, oh, they'll be fine. No.
Yeah. I mean, so often they will figure it out. But like in the case of Midnight, she got shot twice. She's, you know, she's been wandering from neighborhood to neighborhood. She's like looking for food. And yeah, she once brought me a frog, The frog had been dead for a while. It was already stiff, and it was like, oh,
oh.
No. And then she just started chomping. I was like, no, 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 here, here, take some more food. It wasn't even feeding time. It was like, just get rid of that thing. It looks like it's got disease or something. But, you know, so if you want to bring the cat in, then you need to probably trap the cat. It's very unlikely that even if you have a good relationship with this cat who's been coming around, that they're going to let you just pick them up and put them, you know.
Probably some of the indoor cats don't even let you do that.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, unless it's a cat that's very recently been dumped and is desperate.
Right.
They might let you pick it up. But so you're going to need to trap the cat. And there's ways to do that that don't break the budget, that are not hard to learn. And so that's one of the things that I go over in the book is how to set up a humane trap. And, you know, and how to, and then get them, you have to make prior arrangements with a veterinarian so you can bring them to the vet and have them tested and examined and make sure that it's okay for them to come in the house.
Sometimes the local SPCA or some of the local TNRs will lend you a habitat trap to trap the cat. So you don't have to run out and buy one.
Exactly. A lot of the shelters around here will loan you a trap. Like they'll ask you for a deposit. And you go in and trap the cat. When you return the trap, they give you back the money. And it's just so, you know, they can't afford to be giving away all these traps.
Of course not.
But it's much easier for them to let you do the trapping because there's so many cats that they're working with. And then you can get vouchers frequently from the towns that will, you know, make it like not very expensive at all to get the cat fixed.
I'm very lucky where I live in a very small town, and it's very reasonable spay and neuter here. But when my mom ran the Humane Society here before she passed away, she had an arrangement with one of the local veterinarians, and she had vouchers. It was even less expensive. So there's no reason not to. But one thing I want to say, though, if you do have a cat that's obviously a stray, you know, want to have them checked for a chip, because there are those instances where somebody's cat gets out and they're looking for their cat. So double check that he or she doesn't have an owner. Sometimes they have a chip and people don't want them back.
We had a cat like that in the neighborhood. He has a chip, but the owner never registered the chip.
Ugh.
Really interesting story about, we called him Oreo, but his name was Mochi. And I think he's now found a new home, which is good. But he was coming around all the time. Such a friendly cat. Him, you could just pick him up. He would just, and he would talk, and he liked to be petted.
What a good boy.
He was such a sweetheart. And he used to be a barn cat. This is the story I heard. And he was in a terrible accident. Someone was pulling the thing that you take for horses. It was empty at the time, but he ran over the cat.
Oh, God.
And the driver felt so bad. He paid for all the medical bills. The cat had surgery and was in the hospital for weeks. And then the barn didn't want him back there, because they were afraid he'd get hurt again. So this guy who lived in the neighboring development, took him in. But Mochi would sneak under the fence, and he was always here. And he was here any kind of weather, freezing cold, storms, in the heat. And we finally found who owned him. He had a chip unregistered. And he was like, he's an indoor-outdoor cat. And he wouldn't, like, take the cat back. And then Mochi stopped coming here. I don't know if they boarded up the fence, but my neighbor found on the Long Island, on the Suffolk County Lost and Found, a picture. And we had pictures of Mochi, and we knew it was the same cat. And she was saying, has anybody lost this cat? And we got her the phone number for this guy. And he was like, he's an indoor-outdoor cat. Didn't even ask where he was. So I think she adopted him. I think that he just, because this went on for 2 years. And, you know, poor Mochi even if it was freezing cold out,
like when is he ever indoor? If he's an indoor outdoor, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Never.
That's awful. You mentioned you're writing another book, which I'm very excited about. Let's talk about that.
Thank you. I'm starting a series. So in the past, I've written dystopian books, thrillers, science fiction, but, I think that people don't really want to read about dystopia because we might be living it right now. So
yeah, we are.
People are looking for an escape. So, and the cat book did really well. So I'm writing a cozy cat mystery series. I just finished the first draft It's going to be called the Berman Bay Cozy Mysteries. It's going to feature a cat rescuer as the amateur sleuth, which is going to be patterned after John DeBacker. His name is going to be JD, and John is completely on board with this. We have a whole arrangement. And in fact, some of the proceeds are going to go to funding his rescues.
That's awesome. So, I love that.
So it's going to be about a small town on the North Fork of Long Island, very far east, called Berman Bay. Berman, as you know, is a cat breed. And it's going to be where there's a, the first one is about a murder. Well, they're all going to be about murders because that's what cozies are, cozy mysteries are. And the cats are going to play a significant role in uncovering clues, you know, not intentionally, but because they're cats and because they do what cats do. And so JD is going to find himself in the role of sleuth because they're either his cats or cats that he's rescuing, and things are going to turn up. And it's going to be like, well, wait a minute. I thought the police said this, but look at this. So I'm really excited about it. And
I can tell. I can't wait. I'm already excited.
Oh, thank you. So I wanted it to come out for the holidays, but it's probably not going to come out, you know, for that week. But in January, I want it to be out in January. And then I want to do, it actually only took me 5 weeks to write the first draft.
You really had it in your head already.
I spent a lot of time formulating before I, which is not my usual. Usually I'm what we call a pantser. I just sit down and write. But, I didn't do this completely as a plotter, but I had to, because it's a mystery, I had to really have the details of the crime, which I didn't, you know, I still had to go back a lot and edit as I was going, like, oh no, but I want this to have happened. That means this can't have happened. And, you know, but I would like to put out 3 or 4 a year so that it becomes a whole series, the Berman Bay Cozy Mystery Series.
Oh, that'll be awesome. I love things like that. I have a friend who writes cat mysteries like that. So I'm looking forward to this.
Thank you so much.
And everyone out there, you really need to pick up this book. If you want to understand more about cats' behavior and where it comes from, why they do what they do, this is an awesome book to have. I hate that we're out of time.
Feels like it.
I think you and I could probably chat forever about cats. And I'd love to have you back.
Oh, great.
Especially
thank
when
you.
Your other books come out. I'd love to have you back. I hope people have a little more understanding of what cats are out there. What's the difference between a feral and a story? And what you should do if you find a cat. A lot of people just don't know. I don't know why they don't know. I mean, it seems innate to you and me, but I guess people that don't work with cats all the time really are perplexed by it. There's a cat outside. What do I do? Before we go, do you have any last words of wisdom for people?
You know, I think a lot of people try to they look at a cat and they treat it like a dog. Their expectations of behavior are that of a dog. To just, you know, understand that a cat needs to come to you. A cat needs to feel that they're seen for who they are, just like a person does. And so to try to put yourself in the cat's paws and, you know, it's going to sound weird, but be respectful of the cat. Of the cat's individuality. And if you do that, the cat will really appreciate that, because when you're loved by a cat, it's so super special, because they are not predisposed to liking people. You know, they need comfort and love, but they're very particular about who they lavish their emotions on and their love on. And so, you know, just try to don't think of them as littler dogs. Think of them as the whole different species that they are. They're actually more similar to us than they are to dogs.
I agree with that. And you have to accept them just as they are. If they're shy, if they want to be on your lap, if they don't want to be on your lap, can't force a cat to do what they don't want to naturally do.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much. I really love that you came on the show. I'm finishing up this book. This makes a great Christmas present, people. Whiskers in the Wild. And thank you, Mark Winter, for giving me this space on Pet Life Radio. I really appreciate it. I get to talk to all these wonderful people. And we'll be back next time with another special guest. And until then, just remember that every day is Caterpillar. We'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.